And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Annett, Eagle Strong Voice. It's October 18th. Well, top that, folks. Isn't that wonderful? That's one of our spiritual ancestors, the Digger and Levelers movement in England. Happened right at the same time that the first Commonwealth, the first Republic, was established in England. That abolished monarchy forever. And that's one of the bases of us establishing the Republic, or rather reestablishing the Republic here in Canada. And you can follow our work here every Sunday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, bbsradio.com/herewestand. Go to that archive site. You'll see all of our programs going back 5 years to the time of the founding of the Republic of Canada, January 2015. It's all archived there, our history of this movement. Also follow our work in terms of more of the background at murderbydecree.com. Well, today, if any of you have been following our postings, you'll notice that we did a broadcast yesterday and going to repeat it a little bit today for those who didn't watch it. There's a BC election coming up next Saturday, October 24th. And of course, we are calling on people to boycott it, not only because of the fraudulent and criminal nature of the system, but for a specific reason, because of Bill 19, which was passed in the British Columbia legislature. And it basically puts all power in the hands of one man, the lieutenant governor. He can rule by decree. He's not accountable. He and his cronies are placed beyond the law, and you can't sue them. So if you vote in this election, you're basically ratifying the system of slavery. They can impose any measure they want, and they're above the law. So really what they're doing is they're setting back the clock to the time of the Middle Ages, where one person can rule by decree. It's basically a vote to abolish democracy. So we're saying to people, not only don't vote, but make a stand, vote instead for the Republic of Canada. We're going to be having people at the different polling stations around BC to get people to mark a ballot for the Republic. Most importantly, take out Republic citizenship, join your local assembly. You can learn more, republicofcanada@gmail.com or republicofcanada.ca. And write to that address. We'll send out a flyer you can hand out to folks at the polling station. Should be a lot of fun. And don't forget, this is a test case because there'll be other elections held across Canada, provincial and eventually a federal election. And this is our answer to the criminal system. And two of my guests that are going to be on today, leading into our conversation with them, two of the people leading the struggle, their names are Andrew and Shannon. And they are leaders of not only the Common Law Assembly and Republic in the East Coast of Canada, in Nova Scotia. They are also being in the forefront of battling the mandatory vaccination program. And as a result, they have been targeted. We're going to be talking a little bit about their story today. But we also want to use it as a platform to talk about the various struggles, the things we've been learning on the ground. And we'll get more into that in our conversation. Also to remind folks that the assemblies are growing by leaps and bounds, especially in the East. And we have massive numbers of people wanting to organize, but very few people willing to step forward and actually offering their home, willing to organize. We have regional conveners now in Alberta, in southern Ontario, and in the Maritime provinces, but we need more of you to get on board. So please take that to heart. Well, then welcome, Andrew and Shannon. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Hi, Kevin.
It's great to have you both here. Let me ask you if you can just first of all say something about yourself, your background, and you know, the campaigns you've been involved in, and especially in terms of the assembly on the East Coast. I know a lot of people are interested in that, and then we'll get into the recent incident and what we're doing about it. So hop in, either one of you. Go ahead.
Well, my name's Shannon. Andrew and I are together. We have three kids together. We're located in Nova Scotia. We've been activists here for pretty close to a decade, I would say, from a wide range of things, from vaccine injuries to autism biomedical support to most recently everything that's going on with COVID and some loss of freedom. So we run a few groups and pages on Facebook, Informed Consent Nova Scotia. We're also part of the new Atlantic Common Law Assembly that was set up September 18th. Andrew was nominated and elected as the sheriff, and I am the program committee coordinator.
Thanks, Shannon. Andrew, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us on. Another group that we've done background work for, we've not actually been online personalities, but we've helped it with Vax Canada as well and helped them in behind the scenes with, I'll say, production and research. So it's been an interesting ride for, I guess, the past 10 years, witnessing what we have and trying to advocate for our son and, I guess, learning the truth along the way.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, people are focused a lot these days on the whole issue of masking. But, of course, that's just almost temporary in terms of the mandatory vaccinations coming down. And any thoughts about, I know that people have often got different reasons for why they got involved in the idea of a common law assembly. Do you want to both talk a little bit about what led you to kind of go from the whole vaccination awareness campaign to the idea of the assembly?
Well, for us, it's been like a long battle with our current government to seek support for the vaccine injured in Nova Scotia. It's been made very clear from the several meetings that we've had, from our MLA to our MP to letters written to our hospitals, the autism team, that nobody cares. These kids aren't in the best interest. And so to be able to make changes, we need to do something ourselves. And you're right, it still can go to masking and all these things that are in jeopardy. But for us, like, this could maybe open a lot of doors for a lot of people that don't know that they can advocate for their kids more and for treatments that they're not getting here. Because we met with our MLA one time about our son's vaccine injury, and we provided a whole lot of studies, a lot of research, all backed by science, and he said straight out to us, even if you're right, even if you're 100% right, nobody's going to care, nobody's going to do anything. And like that was really like hard hitting. Like, we're really on our own, so we need to do something outside of our current system because, gosh, when my son was first diagnosed, I think we were at a 1 in 69 diagnosis rate, and it's at like 1 in 10 now, and soon it'll be 1 in 1. So that's why we started, like, advocating so much for vaccine mandates specifically hard a year ago when Dominic Cardy introduced Bill 39 in New Brunswick to mandate vaccine on all school children. And that was, like, a really long road. That was a year battle. And we both testified in front of the standing committee. They all know our story, the New Brunswick government, our government. Nobody cares. So I think that's why, a big reason why we got into it. The masks and COVID is kind of, I think, what initiated quickly with a lot of other people around us. What do you think, Andrew?
the big thing for me in the beginning was the obviousness how everyone was feeling safe and secure hiding behind the government itself, knowing that they were employees, agents, acting representatives, subcontractors of this bigger body that I think everyone else was, I guess, regarding as the ultimate authority and thinking that's where all of our rights came from. And I just had a different understanding from the get-go. And as I was being told, you know, well, you know, maybe you are right about it all and no one's going to care. Well, that was heartbreaking for me because I was in the offices of the individuals who I was led to believe were supposed to care and engage, that were supposed to assist, train me to access the system or advocate in the best interests of my family. And it's just been a constant obstruction from the people who I was led to believe were there to actually help us navigate the system. Mm-hmm. They've compounded the problems or compounded the injuries, not found us any way of alleviating any of them. So that's one of the biggest eye openers here in the process is just right. Coming to the understanding of how much people.
Yeah, the old saying, your best teacher is a black eye, and once the system gives us a black eye, especially when our children are involved, we don't have any other alternative but to find something new. And that's what's, you know, the assemblies are catching on all over because people from various different situations are coming to the same realization, right? That it comes down to us now and what we do.
Yeah, right now it seems like everyone's got skin in the game somehow that's invested or involved with the freedom movement most actively. Like you're saying, these people have already taken multiple black eyes and we're just sick of being victimized by a system and we're ready to you know, put our foot down, stand firm, and push back together. They're like, no, you're not doing this to us anymore. There's, you know, we're the majority. We're the 99.9% non-special interest group, the people. So why are these things happening to us? You know, it's just anyway.
No, I do want to get into what happened recently. You know, what you both and your family have gone through, but I want to ask first of all. Have you found within the assembly it's a good forum in which to raise this and other issues? How has it been for you? I mean, in the process of being part of the Atlantic Common Law Assembly.
That's where the support has come from during this time. That's where we felt most comfortable bringing the problem and the people that actually responded. And to see the people being level-headed inside the assembly and offering support but not superimposing it, not just thrusting their version of what we need upon us, having a more equal mindset of, you know, just putting themselves out there to know that they're there, but leaving it up to us ultimately of what we need from them. A lot of it this far has been the common law stuff, trying to do administration, trying to find ways of procedure of not taking the next punch, maybe perhaps throwing one out myself towards the system.
With the situation that came up recently, which we'll talk about in a little bit, but yeah, I don't think we would have been able to really get through that as effectively without our assembly. Like, that's who showed up at our house, that's who's been helping us research on what to do. Without them and the knowledge and education we've had the last few months leading up to that altercation, we were able to handle it in an entirely different way, which led to a success for us. You know, like, we'll get
into details. I think, go ahead, sorry.
No, that was it. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, it leads really well into... in the incident. Maybe we should talk about that now. Exactly what happened recently? Do you both want to describe it?
Well, yeah, I guess I was the first one that actually had the interaction. It was with Child Protection Services. I was just on my way outside of my door, and I noticed a shadow outside the door on my way out. So I was, you know, awaiting, I don't know, I thought maybe an Amazon delivery or something, but there was two people standing there, and they wanted to confirm my name. I knew better than to confirm my name. I didn't identify myself and just return back, well, who are you? Once they informed me that they were with Child Protection Services, I as a father of three children who doesn't commit crimes, who doesn't abuse his children, who, you know, strives to do his best to take care of his children, working so hard to reverse the symptoms of nonverbal autism in my son, I found it offensive and threatening, I guess, is the best way I could say I responded, and just simply informed them that this wasn't a consensual conversation, they didn't have an appointment, and they were to leave my property immediately. My children were inside the house, and they didn't need to have an escalated situation play out. They didn't respect my wishes. They were combative and trying to inform me of how their policies and procedures were going to play out. I didn't listen to very much of it, to be honest with you. I felt trespassed upon on my own property and threatened, so I was angry and became more adamant that they were to leave my property, and the next interaction that we would have would either be a police officer that they had called or I had called myself. That I knew that the situation was going to escalate, and there should be an intermediary on site to make sure it was done correctly. They dragged their butts to get off my property, kind of taunted and antagonized me on the way off at that time. They were parked in my driveway, blocked me in my own van at the top of my driveway. But I got them out, and they parked at the end of my driveway, and they called the police. It was probably 20, 25 minutes later that they showed back up again on my property, and then I had to go back outside again with, of course, a very animated situation in my house at this point. I had to go in and disclose that, of course, Child Protection Services was just at my house. I didn't ask questions. I didn't really know what they wanted, nor did I care. But they were gone, and the situation had gotten quite animated, and I was under the impression it was most likely not done yet. So, of course, my wife being home and my three children, that the situation kind of evolved itself naturally inside of the house. And when by the time the police showed up, the children and Shannon were in quite a concerned, distressed state, as I was. And I went out to try to get the situation to be dealt with once again, away from my children, away from my wife. The police initially wouldn't listen. They were very, very sure that they were going to be coming with the Child Protection Services in to acquire their objectives. But I stood. Oh, go ahead. Yeah. I stood my ground, and they just continued to come at me. It was about a good 45 minutes to an hour that they were verbally getting aggressive and trying to question my own authority, I guess, on my own land, and ask me to be more reasonable than interacting with the CPS workers. It just came to a point with the police officers when he was nose to nose with me that I thought it was going to get physical once again, as I did when the CPS workers first showed up. So when I was nose to nose with the RCMP officer, I at that time instructed him it would be the best time to get a supervisor on site. So him and his partner shut down immediately, and they backed up a little bit with the CPS workers, knowing now that I knew enough to actually ask for a supervisor. It seemed kind of controlled itself from that point. I guess once I asserted control and I knew my rights and I had exhibited that I knew my rights, it almost seemed like the police respected me more at that point, and that it all of a sudden became right. That they were feeling from being on CPS's side to being actually on my side.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought so too. You know, I've not had the most positive interactions with the RCMP in my 42 years. I've not had any, I'll say, extraordinary negative interactions, but I've not really considered them to be much of a friend or objective or whatnot. But once I exerted that I knew what my rights were and was actually started exhibiting them, they had my back, and they were just trying to get the situation resolved in a way that got them gone and didn't come back, and I didn't necessarily have to be the one to throw them off my property.
When the CPS people showed up, did they say why they had come? What was their objective in coming?
To me, initially, no, they wouldn't. When they were there with the police, they wouldn't disclose anything really to me. They said that there was the health and safety of the children and that they had received an anonymous call. And
that all the time.
given both of them were more masked and very confrontational, the one that led herself to be like a supervisor had a hard time getting her to show her ID. So, I was just highly uncomfortable with the whole thing. Maybe I understand it differently. I know they're not actually with the government even. I know they're a third party to it, so that gave them even less credibility and jurisdiction in my eyes. I was just, you're a stranger, and you're making claims that you just have no right to be making, so I'm just not even going to entertain the idea. But they look pretty surprised.
How did it work out? Yeah, and let me ask Shannon if you want to jump in with any comments, too, about your experience of it.
Oh, gosh, it was probably 45 minutes into it before Andrew came up and was like, okay, why don't you come down? Because it was pretty heated by the time I got down there. So I go down with like a more different kind of vibe, just being like, what's going on? What are we doing? I could tell the CPS supervisor was definitely rattled. She was triggered in a sense, let's say, by her. I don't think she's ever approached a family and not getting her way, really, at all. She was very aggressive, and she was very defensive as well. And she was immediately unprofessional with me, even though I'm a brand new person. I'm the mom. She hasn't seen me yet. You could just tell, like, Andrew got her to a point where she wasn't even capable of doing her job. So I ask her, why are you here? What is going on? What is the reason? And I finally got out of her that she says that the reason that the complaint was a concern for Andrew's mental stability. Now, I don't know if that's the real complaint. I've never seen any paperwork. I've never seen anything real. She was so rattled. Maybe that's her own opinion in the hour that she's already been at my house. But that was the answer that she gave me. So I responded with, oh, okay, great. Well, then we're done here because I'm in sound mind. I'm responsible for this family just as much as he is, and I'm taking responsibility for him and my children, and you're not needed or required here. Not to mention I had my best friend staying with us at the time, so there was a whole third adult in the dwelling with the children as well. So there was really no reason for this visit. I also believe she, I don't want to say lied, but she said to me, well, I tried to call and make an appointment because I thought it was really weird. Like, let's be honest, we all know about the realities that's going on in the world with abuse and children and real neglect, real abuse, real cases. And for them to get a call and to immediately show up at my house within 24 hours, like, I didn't know we had the resources for this because from what I hear, we don't. There's cases sitting there for months that are being ignored, like real cases put in by real doctors. So it seemed really strange. Yep. And she was like, no, I called your phone. I have all my phone numbers listed with the kids' schools, with the IWK, our children's hospital. If she only called my cell phone, that's not enough for me. Like, she definitely didn't call my home phone. I went through all my voicemails all the way back to April. There was nothing. And for her to just to like show up, no. It just seemed like super strange. And
yeah,
it's the system in itself, it seems flawed to me because who knew you could just put in anonymous calls on anyone making such unsubstantiated claims on them. Like Andrew said, to me, that's a threat on my family. That's harassment. Yep. That's a threat. That's defamation of character. That's slander. That's like coming to my house and throwing a rock through my window. I don't actually think you're concerned about my family because I take that as a threat.
It is assault, yeah.
And I don't think it's anyone that actually knows us. It's my heart more is like it's got to be someone in social media world or someone because if it was anyone that really knew me that was concerned about my children, they would be able to talk to me because they know me. So it's someone that definitely doesn't have my family's best interest or heart or doesn't know me truly. So that was really frustrating.
It's not due process.
She wasn't,
yeah,
I remember
there's no
saying
due process
to her,
when it's an anonymous complaint and it would not stand up in court at all. So what I wanted to ask you both is, do you believe that it happened because of your involvement in the assembly? And Andrew, you had volunteered to be the common law sheriff in that. Do you think the two things are related?
Well, we do, and it was funny. We had a meeting at our house with common law assembly members not even 24 hours before they showed up at our house. We had a meeting at our place Thursday night from like 7 till 9, and they were at our house by 1:32 the next afternoon. And we do a lot of, like, we've been doing a lot of activist work, and then we joined the assembly. Back in January, we hosted the Vaxxed People's Truth movies for Vax Canada and the Vax We Are Vax team. And we were called out on Twitter by another autism advocacy group then as the most notorious anti-vaxxers in the province. So we're not people's favorite. And now that we're trying, like now that we're doing this and taking even more control and power over ourselves and teaching others how to do the same, maybe that's a threat to someone.
Any of the enemies you've made could easily have made that quote anonymous complaint. So, I mean, you know, it's easy. Oh, tell me how it worked out that day. What actually ended up happening? I remember I got a urgent email from somebody in the assembly saying it had happened and a bunch of them went down to protect you. What went on exactly?
Well, just to finish up my interaction with the supervisor, she was really frazzled. She wouldn't show Dina her badge, my friend that was there. She wouldn't really show me. And then right at that moment, she got pulled away by the sergeant or the supervisor guy that got called in, the third police. And I never had an interaction with her again. The police, like Andrew said, were definitely more on my side than hers at this point. Because I remember saying, like, what do I need to say to you to get you to leave my property? You don't have consent to talk to my children. You don't have consent to see my home. And you don't have consent to interview me. Send me a letter. I don't know. What do I need to do to get you to leave? And she just was, like, stunned. And the police officer was like, well, you heard her. What do you need? What does she need to do to get you to leave? And I just felt like totally supported by the RCMP. And then the sergeant guy came over and took them away. He's like, I want to talk to you guys. And I remember the supervisor went, but the male CPS worker just stood there. And I was like, he said, you guys, that means you too. So then he goes and follows the sergeant, and then I've never seen them again. Andrew can probably follow up, but that's why we left it feeling kind of unresolved, like that they may come back, and why we stayed at some hotels and some Airbnbs a few days after, because it was left so like we won, we were successful, they left our property, but I still felt like so many unanswered questions and like, are they coming back type questions, you know?
Yeah.
Well, especially since like clearly your targeted people, your family are targeted. So, Andrew, go ahead.
I've been learning with the assembly more and more. I've been getting more, I'll say, assertive as well with my interactions towards the individuals that have defrauded me and my wife and done the harms to my child, and holding their feet more so to the fire with the words I choose to use. So that's another reason why some of this could be coming back, is I think that they're starting to tune in that I'm not playing, as I tune into more appropriate ways of articulating my issues. And, you know, they want to represent it as crazy because it's not, for common law, it's not very common knowledge, if you understand. So it can be represented as being a very out there philosophy.
But you did call the police again 2 days later, and they showed up here. You should tell them about that, because follow up a little bit with that you were correct, like that you kind of verified.
Yeah, the resolution, though, of that actual event that day, that was done on wordplay. The actual work order that those two CPS workers had was to come out and to observe the children. So the sergeant worked through in his head what the definition of observe was very quickly, and me and him made an arrangement where I was going to go get my three children out of my house, put them in my parents' car, and they were just going to leave. They're going to go around the damn corner with my kids. That way they could say they physically observed my kids. They got proof of life that my children were alive. I made it very clear with Children Protective Services. They were not to engage with my children. They were not to ask them a question. They were to stay back. But I understood what the sergeant was trying to do, was to amicably shut this down in the quickest way possible. So I made direct eye contact with him. I said, I comprehend what you're doing, and I will play ball with you. But these people are leaving, and they're not to come back here. And I had a feeling that he was going to more so let them know the score on the way out. They both looked like they were pretty rattled at this point anyways. But
it's interesting. From what you're both saying, it sounds like you moved the police in your direction in the course of the interaction, that you didn't get the sense they were coming out as a unit to simply attack you, that the police were won over to some degree. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, because as soon as they were right there too, when they heard her answer of his mental stability as the reason she was there, and at this point we're on hour two and a half. If he wasn't mentally stable, he would not have been able to hold his composure for almost 3 hours in front of police. And we had your parents show up. We had three other friends show up. And he, like, the way he was able to handle the situation, handle his family, there was more mental distress coming from the CPS workers than anyone in our family. I felt like they definitely had our back, and I don't even know if they knew why they were there at the end of it. For sure.
I think it's really
an important lesson, because, you know, we want to use this as a lesson for people who face the situation again, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, any things like that you can share with listeners.
Well, it was a very animated, very verbally aggressive confrontation, and I'm not very well, maybe I am proud of how it played out in the end, but I had to test the police and how much they actually were on my side, And I had to really bring it home to these CPS workers how unwelcome they were on my property. So before they left with the police, with the police standing right next to me, I was very stern with both of them, and I made them aware if I was to see their face on my property again that I was going to start hitting them, and I wasn't going to stop hitting them until one of these kind RCMP officers drug me off of them. So next time they show up, they better show up with the police. And there was no consequence for that verbal exchange. And there was no law broken. That was a perfectly lawful. They hopefully are not going to accept my offer. Hopefully I won't see them again. But it was delivered very clearly to both of them that they were not to return here, and it would be extraordinarily physical if I was to see them back here again.
And saying things like we don't see you as an authority. We don't recognize you as an authority. You do not have consent to talk to me. You do not have consent to talk to our children. This is not a consensual conversation, and we're asking you to leave our property now. And just saying it over and over and over.
I kept referring to my children as my property. I thought that part was key inside of it as well. I didn't want to use the term children or kids. In my head, that everything here is my asset, my property, and that's just the simplest way I could make the claim. I make a claim for all of my property, and they have no claim to any of it. So that doesn't give them much breathing room.
So tell me about what – tell us what's happened since then. Have you had any other response from them, or what's your situation now?
Well, we're out here kind of dangling, trying to figure out all of these common law procedures ourselves, how to work both systems at the same time. So I've been reaching out to the Supreme Court in the administration, trying to access the common law aspect of the courtroom, and essentially just put them on notice that these procedures are following forward, and trying to get them to actually engage, do their homework instead of, I don't know, find themselves liable for not doing their homework, not knowing their job, and not being able to help us. But that's where we're at right now, is trying to still escalate this matter. We're not going to let it go. We've not had any more interaction from the authorities because of it, but I don't need any more of this going forward. It's been a long 10 years, and it just doesn't seem to be letting up. It seems I need to engage and to shut it down myself. Put in, well, I guess our conveyor, Dina Churchill, she put in a official complaint with Child Protective Services, and that's one of the great benefits of being in an assembly, too, is having a group of people who can actually do official backup support administration-wise to let these people know that you're just not hanging on a low branch, just ready and able to be picked at any moment, that you've got support of other people around you. But yeah, a very articulate letter written, putting them on notice of the actions of the individuals that day, and served a copy of it to the RCMP. And it as well reflected our opinions of the RCMP, that we were glad that they were there. They acted professionally, and it wouldn't have worked out so amicably without them. So, hopefully we're just building a relationship with the right people.
It raises a whole bigger question of jurisdiction. And when people declare themselves sovereign and declare themselves part of a different jurisdiction within the Assembly or even the wider republic, then, you know, that kind of gives them pause. And I think it's a great opportunity, and wondered both of your thoughts on this, to get people to think in a bigger sense of it's not just a matter of reacting and defending ourselves, but actually going on the offensive and saying, you guys don't even have jurisdiction here, so we have nothing to say to you, right?
Yes, that was said several times during the 3 hours that they were here. Apparently, it took them a few hours to hear it.
I had asserted jurisdiction with the RCMP after about 50 minutes or so, that before I was able to bring Shannon out, that was the point I needed to get to.
I really true believe these people, 9 out of 10 times, 10 out of 10 even, like, when they go to a situation like this, they get what they want. They just get let in the house, they get to observe, ask whatever questions they want, and they were not used to being told no, for sure. And to be told,
that's
you're not
pretty apparent, I think. Yeah.
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 And not to mention, like, these two workers came in full face masks. I couldn't even identify if their faces matched their badges to begin with. So they were still strangers. They wouldn't identify themselves from the beginning. So to me, it was over. But I don't know. I just felt like this vibe from them that they weren't used to not getting their way. And they were definitely trying to be able to see our kids or whatever. So it was very interesting.
I think that's important. You know, it's important for people to know that instead of thinking ourselves as helpless victims, it just a little bit of knowledge can stop them in their tracks and asserting your own authority. That's a very important lesson, I think.
Yeah. In a follow-up conversation, I've felt more comfortable with the RCMP since, and I had another interaction with an RCMP officer, and actually confirmed with her that I made the claim common law is the supreme law of the land of Canada. It has jurisdiction all over every other form of law, and very slowly that was conceded with a nod that yes, I was correct. And I said, so based off of that, you know, if I do follow through with the threats that I make, I've got all the right in the world to do so, and you know, no legal harm could come to me. She said, well, we prefer if people call us because that's our job, but no, that is your right. If that you're in that position and you take those actions, you're not committing an offense. You know, of course, they're concerned with firearms. They don't want things escalating beyond a point that is reasonable. But yeah, you have the right to act on your own best interests for sure. You're the one who has the liability to do it. You know, it's your life.
Well, and in an even bigger sense, a community has a right to defend itself. That's the whole idea of an assembly, is that if the courts aren't going to operate and the government is acting against our own best interests, then we can establish our own governance. And that's really the idea of the assembly.
Yeah, and that's where we're kind of at now, is we don't want to be done with it. So we're trying to maybe write up a statement of claim, or like Andrew's trying to be able to get in with a judge to get retribution, I guess, for some of what's happened. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like I guess what they're saying is courts are closed, nobody can fight for anything right now. I'm not sure.
Well, no, I think I'm just right now stuck in an administrative process. I think I'm asking them questions they've not been asked before, and they don't know what to do with me.
Yeah, because you got a weird, like, you went and talked to the court person, but then the next day you got an email from some lawyer, which was interesting.
Yeah, I reached out to the registrar, and come the end of the conversation, they weren't really able to help me. There was a very positive, kind interaction, and it just was amicably resolved that just wasn't the place I was going to get help. But I got an email back the next day from a phone call that I had made a month and a half prior on the exact same issue. They were reaching out wondering if I still wanted to meet with their legal consultation team concerning my legal matter. So I wrote back an interesting email to that concerning common law and what I was actually trying to go about doing. That went back to the executive department of the Supreme Court. So that was, I believe that was Thursday that I sent that email back to them.
No reply yet.
It's interesting because one of our organizers in Ontario, they seized his guns, and they keep trying to get him to have an appearance in court over the phone and with a judge. And Paul keeps saying, look, that's not due process. How do I know who it is at the other end of the line? I'm not going to go on the phone with you. I want a court appearance. So you can refuse their whole system if they're trying to, you know, they have this substitute legal system they use now, which isn't legal at all. And, you know, so, I mean, that's more of the same nonsense, right?
Oh, no, for sure. I'm not accepting that. It's my physical presence. I don't understand the legal ease of it, but I know there's so much trickery to do inside of this profession that I know well enough that I need to be inside of a courthouse when I'm doing anything lawful or legal.
Right. You know, it's interesting, too. I wanted to let you know that in Victoria and Vancouver, British Columbia, now we've had two incidents where police have looked at the, you know, the September 8th law that the Council of Common Law Assemblies passed. that actually outlawed COVID measures across Canada, right? And twice now, police have looked at that and said, well, you can use this if somebody tries to get you to mask. Now, when the police are saying our law is valid and can be used in a legal defense of ourselves, that's the way, you know, like what they did with you, the Mounties kind of going along with you. When pushed against the wall, the police will cooperate because we know we're standing on, they know we're standing on common law. But somebody has to push the envelope a bit to get that obvious. Otherwise, we assume that the whole system's against us, but we can break it down and get them to come over at our side. You know, that's what you're proving again, I think.
No, I totally agree with you. It's just a matter of somebody actually doing that physical exhibition of their freedom and rights. And as long as somebody, anybody, is willing to fulfill that role, it'll be acknowledged, respected, and honored by those who are paid to serve, you know? I think that honestly that this is what they want, and they can't be the ones to implement it. They can't have it seen be a police takeover or a military takeover. But these places can definitely support the people. That's where they're drawing their employment from, is the people. They're part of us. We're all,
right,
like I said, the 99.999% non-special interests. It's just they're contractually bound not to get involved just because of how it would look.
Now, we've got about 12 minutes left. There's a bit of background noise. I don't know if one of you has something in the background, but in the last 10 or 12 minutes, I'm wondering if you could talk about bringing some of that lessons home in terms of the work of the assembly. Maybe, Andrew, your role as sheriff in terms of maybe inviting these cops into a common law workshop, or any ideas you had about how you can use this to continue to build the work of the Common Law Republic Assembly in the Maritimes.
Well, it's the trial by fire, I guess. It's going out there and proving that this is legitimate, getting the validation from people witnessing the practical application of it, and walking everyone through the process. The police, in a sense, some of them just need to know that these examples are existing and just witness it in their day-to-day lives, just like the people in the courthouse. Like, I don't think they're opposed to doing common law. They just have never done it before, so we have to kind of walk them through the procedure of doing it calmly and peacefully. And I think we're going to change a lot of people over onto our side of thinking. I don't know how they wouldn't want to be free. But the police, I think, will be drawn, and the military members will be drawn to wanting to be acknowledging common law more so, giving up their oaths to the Queen perhaps might be the encouragement. The same pitches to the local town councillors about taxation. The same things will apply to everybody. That just be the appeal and following a different philosophy. The self-policing.
Could you mention that? Because we're having a lot of people now are getting involved in your Wednesday Zoom call that the Atlantic Assembly is organizing. We've got people from England, from other assemblies across Canada taking part. And this Wednesday, we're going to be talking about that whole issue of income tax, the idea that we keep federal taxes in the community, set up a trust fund, use the money locally. I think that could get a lot of people on board with this, mayors, town councils, a lot of people who normally wouldn't even think about the idea of, you know, self-governing republic.
Yeah, another huge focus of ours is just getting people to have the self-confidence to self-advocate and having just the core fundamental knowledge to be able to represent common law in a way that will bring them success, I guess. And that's something that I guess we're saying the police could use too, I guess, is understanding the applicability of common law in their workplace and in their job.
Yeah, I think that they would be in for, like, some education sessions because, I mean, I don't know their specific oath to the Queen or whatever you said, but I'm pretty sure they also have an oath to protect our individual liberty and all of our God-given rights. So you can just tell that, like, yeah, I think that the police are more on our side than not. Like, we've been holding freedom rallies for the last, oh my gosh, since April, and they come to all of them, and they do nothing. Andrew goes up and introduces himself, and he's like, hi, this is what we're doing. And they're like, they pretty much answer, we're here to protect you. If you guys end up parading the street, we will escort that walk. They've never once tried to stop any rallies. There's been over 150 people definitely breaking every social distancing COVID restriction in Nova Scotia. Nobody's wearing masks, and they don't do anything. So I feel like the more they know, the more they could, help us get our freedoms back. And they're kind of doing the same thing in the States. I saw today, there's a Stand for Health Freedom group, and I don't know if it's the exact same as common law, but they're trying to get together sheriffs. They're calling them sheriffs as well. And they're basically saying, what does it say here? During this pandemic, constitutional sheriffs across the nation have been stepping up to defend their constituents' rights, pushing against draconian mask mandates and business shutdowns. Because there was a sheriff, in Maine that refused to enforce a police state order. So it's similar. I can see it happening a lot with a lot of police states and officers and in Canada too.
Okay, I'll listen then. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, well, that's the advantage, of course, in America. They've got a constitution which is the ultimate law. The ultimate law in Canada is the Crown. The Oath of Allegiance of members of Parliament and judges is to Queen Elizabeth and her descendants. Although you're right, the local police also take an oath to uphold the law and defend the community. So you might have to ask people to choose what side they're on here eventually. It's a question of allegiance, right?
Exactly, because they're kind of like playing both sides, but it seems every time I have an interaction with the police, they're choosing the more common law fight with the human, not the government. So.
Well, it's always a fight for hearts and minds, and they're family members too. They got kids. We got to appeal to them all the time as human beings, you know. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts? We got about 5 or 6 minutes here. Either of you, if you want to say anything, make any final points, or talk about anything that you're doing in the assembly or any of the work.
I guess I would just urge anybody listening to reach out and to follow any terminology that's speaking to you. It's hard for people who aren't actively involved right now to think about just jumping in first thing and just finding a meeting and going to it. But take some of the trigger words that you're hearing, throw them into Google and process it for yourself. Do some research and see if this is something that you're being drawn towards. If it is, we're here, we're like-minded, and we're trying to all acquire the same goal. So, it would be just great to see more of us uniting from the different demographics we've been split into. And like I said, uniting under that 99.99%.
Yeah.
Thanks, Senator. What do you think, Shannon? Any final words?
No, I just, if anyone listening wants to learn more about common law, especially if you're in Atlantic Canada, if you're looking to maybe join our assembly. Sorry, I think my phone's dying. Please reach out to us. We have a website. You can look up Dina Churchill, Andrew Mader. I'm Shannon Michelle. And we'd love to get more people on board with this, because the more people that we have, the more changes that we can make. And we wouldn't have been able to get through this situation at all without our assembly of people. It's like they've all come together and they've done so much for us to even be able to even have a plan with this. I feel like if we weren't part of this assembly, the events would have happened in a completely different way, because we wouldn't have been learning everything we've been learning with all of our Zooms the last few months. So we wouldn't have been able to advocate for ourselves perhaps in the same way. But in addition to that, we probably just would have given up. But because of what we've learned, we're like, no, maybe we can take them to court. They can't just do this to people. And that gives us a lot of power and strength and motivation to not just go after CPS coming into our house and the damage they did to our children and whatever that day. But maybe actually being able to go after our son Ethan's case and holding someone accountable for any vaccine injuries in Nova Scotia. Because that's my main reason of why I started doing any of this, is if you have a vaccine injury in this country, aside from Quebec, nobody is held liable. You are on your own. And vaccine injuries are real. They do happen. And the government will not acknowledge it, nor will they help you, nor will you get appropriate treatment. So I'm just looking for people to have informed consent and be able to make real decisions for their children on right. everything from mask science to vaccine safety inefficiency to even the fact that locking down an entire society is bad for us. And I just want people to, like, right. start waking up. So the more we can get together as an assembly, it is a lot quicker to educate, to spread the information, than doing it solo. Because everybody has all
exactly.
these different skills, right? Like, I can't learn it all and keep it all myself,
Brilliant.
But, like, I have 100 yep. other people in my assembly that I can be like, oh, you know the answer to this. And we're able to just get it done so
right.
fast, and it's growing quite quickly. And it's nice to also know that around you that you can trust also.
Right. It's everything.
Yeah.
Both of you, thank you. You just gave a brilliant exposition about why people should be in the Common Law Assembly. Thank you both. I'm sure we'll have you and others from the Maritime Assembly on again. I want to thank you for being on the air today with us.
Thank you so much for having us and letting us tell our story. We really do appreciate it and everything you've done for us over here in Atlanta, Canada.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Shannon. Thank you, Andrew. We'll talk to you both again soon.
Okay. Have a good night.
Those are...
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Andrew and Shannon from Halifax, well, near Halifax in Nova Scotia, and they are leaders in the Atlanta Common Law Assembly. Now, if you want to be part of the Zoom call that the Atlanta Common Law Assembly sponsors every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Atlantic time, that's 1 hour past Eastern time for you Yanks who don't realize that there's another time zone east of you in the Atlantic region of Canada. Yes, you can write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com. We'll connect you up with that Zoom link. And from what Andrew and Shannon were both saying, it shows you the power and the necessity of being organized now. One finger by itself doesn't do it, but a fist together can make a difference. And that's the whole philosophy of the Common Law Assembly. And then one day those assemblies establishing the Constitutional Republic of Canada, the self-governing republic of liberty for all of us. You can learn more at republicofcanada.ca. And stay tuned next week. There's going to be more updates from frontline fighters. And especially people in BC, don't forget, do not vote. Write to republicofcanada@gmail.com. We will be sending out a leaflet this week to hand out at the polling booths, telling people not to vote. Instead, mark the ballot we will have there for the Republic and to connect with your local assembly. You can find all our books, murderbydecree.com as well, and the whole history and background of this movement. And we're going to close on another great song. It comes out of our movement, our history. It's called Bella Ciao. And it was the song of the Italian resistance during World War II, the anti-fascist resistance. And it's got beautiful words to it. And I think it really applies to frontline fighters like our brother Andrew and our sister Shannon, who you just heard today. So until next week, take strength, brothers and sisters. We will not go down individually. We will fight out of this madness together, organized within the Republic of Liberty, Love, and Equality for All. I thank you. This is Kevin Andy, Ego Strong Voice. Stay strong, stay clear.